Hello and welcome to CodeBytes, sponsored by Search 5.0. It's CodeBytes' mission to create an accessible pool of mentors. And on today's episode, we're very pleased to welcome Michael Martin to the podcast. Michael is currently the technology director and site lead for ScreenCloud. On this episode, we hear about Michael's incredible journey, including showcasing entrepreneurship at a very early age. We then hear about the industry challenges and advice to any aspiring technologist in today's episode. This is a really good conversation, and I hope you enjoy. Michael, thank you for joining us on CodeBytes this morning. How's things?
Hi, all good. Yeah, looking forward to this. So thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on, Michael. And we did have our first American guest on in, I think it was May time, June. And of course, now we've got our first guest located in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't quite picked up the time yet. I don't know if that comes eventually. You know, it was a lot easier getting the visa than it was getting rid of the Northern Irish skin, unfortunately.
Brilliant. Someday, Michael, someday. Well, listen, pleasure to have you on CodeBytes. Michael, I'd love you to kick things off and just give us an overview of your journey and your experience. And then for those that aren't aware of ScreenCloud, tell us who you are.
Sure, sounds good. So my path into tech was a little less conventional or just early days. So I started just building websites when I was 14, 15. And I mean, like, building little fan sites, MySpace pages, that kind of thing. Eventually then came across WordPress, like early days WordPress. And at that point, I didn't know it was a PHP content manager, so probably still powers half the internet. But at that point, there wasn't really a lot of information about it. So I was just, you know, going, doing things, hacking something here, learning how to do it. And then I started a blog, just teaching people what I just learned, just because I found it fun. But then that grew and grew because there weren't millions of sites at that point. Became quite big, and eventually people started messaging, being like, "Oh, hey, can you build me a website? Can you?" And they start paying money to do that, and I was kind of like, "Wow, people pay money for this. This is just my nerdy hobby. Like, this is fun. Of course, I'll take some money. Why not?" So I did that for quite a few years. I went to uni, computer science, but really, it was more me just so I could continue building that on the side, building a theme business and stuff. I took a year out. My placement year at uni was just continue on that business. So did that for quite a while. Kind of took it to the point where it was going very well. But what I kind of then saw was I hit like a complexity ceiling. You know, at that point you were hiring designers and writers and stuff, but the tech was never going to get more complex than it was. You know, you built donation systems and you built movie databases and you built whatever, but you just hacked them onto WordPress. You weren't architecting something bigger. And the only way I was going to change that was go join a team and do something else, you know, find a bigger group of smarter people, more experienced people. So that's when I switched and ended up taking a job. So I joined BT for a year, worked on UView, which is their TV platform. But then I moved to Deloitte or Deloitte Digital, which is a consultancy. You know, we basically just go into, for me, it was all those large banks and basically build like digital products for them. And then did that 4 or 5 years. And then now, I then joined ScreenCloud about 5 years ago, so that's where I currently am. ScreenCloud's a SaaS company, like a startup. I think I joined with maybe 30 people or so. There was no one in Belfast. It was me and another guy started the office in Belfast. He's no longer here, but I'm still happily well here in Bangkok now since the last year. But it's been brilliant. So we've kind of grown that and maybe about 120 people now. And it's all the ups and downs of SaaS life, venture life, startup life. It's been really good fun. And sorry, what they do is digital signage, which is absolutely nothing to me. So if anyone's listening, it's effectively anywhere you see TVs up on the walls, it's the software that powers what they're doing. So we basically in Belfast, especially, we build the app store for that. So everything people see on screen. So this is things like showing dashboards, it could be showing menus, it could be showing, you know, company news, it could be showing sports scores, weather, just anything you can imagine. So. Yeah, so I hope that covers it a bit.
Brilliant, Michael. And I guess the audience might be questioning, how does one from Northern Ireland end up in Bangkok? How did that work out?
Very fair question. I mean, like all good stories, it involves a girl in there somewhere. So I'm not a very nice person. So she's in Bangkok. So it was personal reasons first. But with ScreenCloud, we have two engineering hubs. The other engineering hub is in Bangkok. So one's Belfast, one's Bangkok. Our CTO has lived out here for 20 years. So it's really our tech started in Bangkok. So it was, you know, the company was very supportive of this. You know, obviously, we've changed the role a bit and figure out ways to make that work. And that's been its own adventure over the last year. But they were very supportive of that. So I was able to do it without having to leave the company or anything. And I still have an office and stuff here I can go join.
Brilliant. Brilliant, Michael. And listen, I think fantastic start to your career and your journey. Obviously, I think you're quite humble there because I know your WordPress consultancy actually had a number of different customers and followers in the end, and obviously balancing that between university very well. It was probably a hobby, you know, for you, as you say, Michael. So really interesting journey. If you were to reflect back on your career, what's been your biggest success or a defining moment for you?
Yeah. Fair question. So, I mean, probably is the two things there. So like early days, like early career, it really was the success of that website, I suppose. You know, at its peak, it was maybe 250,000 unique visitors a month. You know, Twitter early days was like 15,000 followers. You know, you had really big punchy numbers you could point to. You had customers coming. So it meant I had options at that point. You know, I could try and, you know, I always went through phases of like, I built a theme business at one point. I'll build my own little SaaS app or whatever. I never really launched them. But you had the ability to try that. But it also meant when I went to job interviews, it was something that just stayed out. In all of those, in any job interview I've ever done, jobs I've either taken or not, it was something that's very unique. It does jump out on a CV for anyone, or it's more something you can chat about, and it's a good experience. But I think if I was saying like the biggest success, like it has to be the Belfast Screen Cloud team, I think. You know, that's started off, it was just me and one other person. And we just went through all, we had so much freedom. If anything, you could say too much freedom, because like there was a lot of ups and downs. You went through all the mistakes you can imagine making. You know, when your first task is, you know, find an office, find a team. Like, what does a team mean? Like, what people do you need? Also, we're a startup. We're taking over from what had been outsourced development for a while. So everything's on fire, just so you know. Like, I hope you can fix the fires at the same time, which is great fun. But what we've built up there, I'm delighted with. You know, I think like people genuinely really enjoy being there. And there's a lot of us who started in that first couple of months that are still there 4 and 5 years on, and we weren't expecting to be there for more than 2-3 or anywhere more than 2 or 3 years. So the fact people still are, still engaged, ready for the next thing, even the fact that I'm moving over here and it hasn't all fallen apart or anything like that. You know, it's like the people there are able to continue it now and grow it, and where that goes next will be driven entirely by them. Which is really exciting to see. And like, it's nice, and I get to fly back home every now and then and just say, oh, well, awesome, this is still going. This is like, it's even better than I thought. Times are doing fantastic like me. So yeah, that's been the nicest thing to see.
And it's great to see as well that, you know, a company can afford opportunities for to go and explore different parts of the world. And I guess that's obviously a huge benefit, you know, of COVID.
And they like the perspective, you know, the company, like we like the breadth and kind of the mixing is a good thing. You have someone doing the same role or the same exact thing, you know, within a silo or within one location, even location, we're putting it too far, but just staying too narrowly focused for too long doesn't expand new ideas. You know, it's fantastic. So with our hubs, we kind of divided into two halves of the product. So there's apps, everything on screen was in Belfast, most other things were over in Bangkok. But now this is very easy, like, well, I'm coming over with 5 years of having designed our whole app platform, and oh great, now we actually need to mix like our CMS much, much deeper with that. And like, that's a really good perspective to be able to bring over. Same way, you know, people we're able to hire now in Belfast, someone who's, we can focus more on the managerial side of, and the leader, the basically growing a team and what the next phase for Screen Cloud looks like. They do a lot of things, like once a year we would get everyone together for a whole week just to share them to mix from all of our hubs together. And it's all just that, it's like the ability that for people to just communicate, see a little more breadth, and, you know, look more horizontally than their normal day-to-day job. It makes such a difference over time. So I'm really glad the company enables that, for sure.
Brilliant. And it's obviously been a huge success, Michael, in Northern Ireland. But I'm keen to learn, because it's a huge opportunity, you know, start something from scratch locally. What do you feel it was that actually put you in a position to take on Screen Cloud? You touched upon obviously the entrepreneurship and how that stood out, you know, from creating that business from a young age. I mean, was that a part of it, or what do you think kind of, you know, put you in that position?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'll have to bug my CEO and find out why did he ever hire me. I never wanted to give him an option to take it back. So no, I'd say, to be fair, so at that point, I'd say on paper, I probably didn't have all the things needed. You know, so when we hired two people, they were clear, you know, the other person on paper had closer qualifications to it, you know, and a bit more sort of been there, seen something similar. For me, it was more the things that really mattered, the idea of like taking on a bigger challenge. You know, so within Deloitte, I was busy leading our front end group at that stage. It's a wider company and it's a different structure and stuff. I guess it's a much, much bigger company. But you're used to going into another client and okay, we have to build a team from scratch within this client. And we're going to grow from here. We have 5 people on site now. We've got 60 in 2 months. You know, the scale of what Deloitte offered was huge. So like they give you a lot of challenges. And as long as you sort of step up to those and do well and, you know, learn from what you're doing and, you know, throw your pitcher all into it, they would always give you the next one. And I was never worried about, you know, would I, it never really occurred, like, could I try and do something like this? Like what they were describing in the product at ScreenCloud and like what they build, it did really fit my skill sets in terms of, like, front end was my specialism and sort of scaling that out and getting into a serverless world. And that very much translated into what they wanted apps and the Belfast tech side of it to be. And then I had a good team. I had a few, so once I was able to go and recruit and hire a good group around us. So I was never nervous to put your name in the hat, see what happens. I think very much it was the passion for the actual product and the technology and the tech. Like that is the one thing I've been told, you know, did stand out. And it was just like one way or the other, it seemed like a skill set they wanted to have in the mix. And hopefully they don't regret that at this point.
Brilliant, Michael. And Michael, Cobytes, we believe, very passionate about the part of mentorship. And I'm keen to learn, what does mentorship mean to you and how significant is it for one in one's career?
Sure. So again, probably a little unconventional there in some sense. Like I've never obviously worked for myself for 5-6 years, a long enough time. Now you're working with other people, but something's wrong, you've no one to turn to. You know, you're just like, and run a server, it breaks, and you just got to go figure it out. That's all there is to it. But I did, like what I said was true. You know, there was a ceiling as to how complex you can go by yourself. I'm very aware I'd hit that. And it was, you know, the biggest reason to take a, you know, full-time job was I want to go find smarter people. You know, I don't want people in the room to bounce ideas constantly with. And that was huge. In that, I never had a manager that I would do like regular ones-to-ones with. So that's probably the unconventional part. It's just, I don't know, that it never appealed to me as much, you know, on that sort of rhythm or that routine. That doesn't mean at all there weren't really, really intelligent people that, like, I within the company just respected, and I want their opinions, and I have no issue with when I'm stuck on something, or more when there's a big decision kind of playing around your head where there's not right and wrong answers anymore. You know, it's like, oh, I could do it this way, I could do it this way. There's a gamble, there's what have I not thought about? And anytime, like, I've always found those people within any of those companies I work with that are, you know, I just want their opinion. You know, it's someone who, I don't know if I would call them a mentor, probably is, or maybe putting names on it's just what's not needed. But that idea that there's a smarter, like there's people out there that you just respect anywhere, regardless of the line management structure, the project they're on, like the title, you know, our CTO, I don't care how busy he is. It's just like, yeah, he's still my favorite person to like just go into any crazy off the horizon depth of tech conversation with. And like, that's not going to change. It didn't change from the day I started to now. So it's, I think it's just worth talking to those people. But then the other thing I think as well in tech, and what's really served me is like, I think like within software, we have it's a really good position where the best people in the world share everything online. Like I don't know if all industries are like this. Like it feels somewhat unique, or maybe just we have this open source culture or history that's just has pervaded into management practices, team lead practices, but it means like I'm hooked on Twitter and will be until Elon kills it. But until then, the tech industry's in there, and I can follow like the best people out there. And like there's really good examples. You know, like React's a big thing for us or for most companies. But like Dan Abramov on there is like he's the guy building it, but he's also the most like eloquent person explaining any technical concept ever. And like I can go and read all of this. If I want to understand all the driving factors behind like concurrent modes and suspense and server actions and all the things that are happening, I don't need to just go and read the help docs or like chat to someone on the team who might have used some of that. I can go and just go direct to the source. There's people like, you know, if you want like engineering management, like Sarah Drasner on there, she's written a book, Engineering Management for the Rest of Us. By the way, I just prefer the Twitter is funny, but like she's just one of the best like directors of engineering my current role, like on the planet. You know, she works for Google and like her projects, like, you know, Angular as a whole is just one of her projects in there. And it's just like, that's a level of experience that you could set any city in the world, but even especially Northern Ireland, you know, like it's, we don't always get like that scale of a thing. I love that it doesn't matter. You can just reach out and chat to those person, read their best advice, you can pick up podcasts. That's also like probably the last one to mention, but we also, within ScreenCloud, I brought in this like a shape up methodology. So instead of Agile or Scrum or Kanban, which is, if I only learned by based on just the people who are in the companies I work with, I would have done like a better version of those there, as in like I would have taken their best ideas on something like that and iterated on those. But because online, you can find like Basecamp, who have pros and cons, how that company works, anyone knows them. But they have a really interesting idea about how to run projects, the shape up approach. And it is just totally different. Now, if I'd taken that as is applied to us, it would fallen apart. But because people just share, you can go and hear the podcast and chat and hear from the people who come up with it, understand the motivations, what they're actually trying to solve, and then look at your own company and be like, well, these bits actually make sense for us. And we've been doing that for a couple of years now. So I think that's a huge thing in mentoring that like can be overlooked, that people kind of do how a traditional way of looking around, but you have that option. And if you can find a local mentor, that's fantastic. You can also widen that out with these resources that are available to absolutely anybody and completely free. It's all just online. So I think that's a huge thing too.
I think that's such a great spin on it, Michael, as well, because a lot of people might think about the more traditional method of mentorship, you know, physical person, you know, being that sounding board and guiding light, if you like. But you're right, you know, we're living in a world now where we're so accessible. And it's even great to hear that like sort of site leads and technical, you know, directors you have to go to, you know, with regards to their, you know, own favorite person via whatever means, digitally accessible as well, Michael. So that's really good to hear this. Michael, I'm keen to learn, what do you feel is the biggest challenge currently in our industry?
Yeah. I mean, like the biggest topic of the day for sure, I think is AI. And like, it's one of those things where yes, opportunity, but it is also one of the biggest challenges. It's the one I hear a lot about at the minute. So it's probably the one I would chat about here because it's the one that's in my head the most. And it's do a lot of the reactions. I don't know how people listening have reacted to it in different ways. Because you can obviously see excitement and the like, product managers will say, wow, look what all can be enabled, which is completely true. There's exciting things. But a lot of the reactions I sort of find internally as we kind of pushed out certain tools and you know, talk more about it and just try to have conversations about it with the team is people are nervous too. Is it going to replace someone? Is it going to change a drastic part of the job? Is it going to, I don't know, even to as far as are people going to try and use AI tools to watch over what you're doing much more sort of draconianly? And like, you kind of get this entire range of reactions and they're all valid. Like however people are feeling is valid. So I think the best thing is then to be able to talk about it and have those like discussions with people. So like where I'm sort of seeing this and where I'm talking to people and what I would say about it is like all these big questions about like what's software going to look like in 5 years or 10 years, or how is AI going to change coding? How is it going to change every discipline? I'm like, honestly, nobody knows. Like they don't. And that's good and bad. It means like, yes, all the people are like, you know, we're going to have this absolutely perfect world and AI is great. They don't know that. Equally, all the real naysayers that are like, oh, it's going to be mass unemployment and all the real doomsayers, they don't know that either. Like, ignore the extremists on both ends. But in the middle, I think like the thing that's important is, you know, AI does exist now. Whether you want the to or not, it does. The genie doesn't go back into the bottles, kind of, I take it. You know, it's you should lean into it and find out. I think it is a genuine paradigm shift. I think it's going to change a lot of things. I think people that lean into that and figure out how that changes things are the ones that are going to do really well. It would be things like, so there's loads of, I think, opportunities around it. So, like, what things you can do now, you can, if you're an experienced software engineer, things that it's fantastic, especially at the Copilot chat, is you can highlight classes you've written and get it to generate unit tests for you. So, like, that's kind of taken away a slightly mundane part of the job. You know, it's important. We all know unit tests matter. No one gets super excited every morning. You know, great, I get to go and write a mocking factory today. But the AI can do that. It can generate superb test data, like within 1 second. Great, I get to go and focus on the more complex parts. Or the parts where I can add more value. Things now, it'll do pull request reviews for you. I love that, you know, I started coding, people were all worried about like tabs versus spaces. Like no one's had to think about that in 6 years or whatever since Prettier came out. You know, AI is going to do things like that where like the nice job, you know, parts of the job can get better I do think there's like a danger for people coming into the industry now. You know, it's probably the hardest time, you know, if you're coming out, because your first 2-3 years in the industry, you know, the jobs that you would pick up would be, it is, can you build out a library, a UI here? Can you build a fill out another endpoint here, another API here? You know, it's important. It's work that needs done. But obviously, there's a pattern to look at, and that's how you get your stripes. That's how you learn. That's how you do that. And you need to go through all that, because eventually, you know, the code the AI generates is not perfect. It needs looked at by an engineer. It needs modified, or needs put into your system and made maintainable. And there's a whole lot to that. But that's one thing when you're, you know, a developer right now who's had a bunch of years experience and has learned without the AI and can do that. There is a question now, like, okay, if you come out, the work that you might do, the AI might, there's a chance it'll do those. You know, if there's going to be less work for build a standard, you know, a marketing website, for instance, like we can get the script to do that. It comes out perfect. You know, and the AI is progressing really quick in some of those areas. But I think it's like, we should lean into those and accept that, okay, that's happening. What are the things it can't do? But what is like, if you're coming now, how does that change things? Do you actually need to go and learn all the stuff that like the previous generation did? You don't have to put yourself through it. My computer science degree, I remember like they got us to write sort of create your own compiler, but we had, I got to write on paper because the lecturer didn't understand, just didn't like using our laptop. That is not a good use of time. It's a real advantage people come out now. You can just focus on things that are valuable and not have to go through, just because people did in the past. I mean, you have to. I think there'll be new ways to learn. Tools might help with that. The AI, even, you can highlight anything and ask it to explain it. That's a really superb feature where it's not writing anything. It's just telling you how something confusing actually works. Like, that's magic. You know, you had to go and find someone to explain to you in the past. And even like the last one I would go to is like, if you kind of look at like social media now, you know, I have the same, like we all have the same social media apps. We all have, you can get Instagram and TikTok and, I don't know, Be Real for about 5 minutes, one for me. But it's the same apps. If you watch like any, like a teenager, you know, niece, nephew, whatever, using those apps, same thing, and they are just not using them in the same way. So it's just down to habits and how you think about it and you're brought up with it. So there's one thing, again, people coming out now will have an advantage, you know, whatever the world looks like in 5 years, growing up natively with that, getting in the industry natively, if you've just got in assuming that there is these tools that could really augment your workflows, you might find that you're well ahead of someone who's had 15 years, but you know, hasn't been able to change or adapt or whatever. So I think all these things, there's pros and cons, there's risks, but yeah, I just kind of advise anyone to stay open-minded at least, see where it takes them.
I think that's going to be the key, isn't it, Michael? It's the mindset and your approach towards this, and the more behaviors and softer skills. So be open-minded, you know, show adaptability, yeah. Be curious, and that will obviously kind of make you flourish over the next 2 to 3 years, whenever obviously AI gets more integrated. And you're right, you know, it's exciting too, because certainly from my end, it's going to bring a whole new landscape of roles within technology, you know, potentially, and what they may look like. We've got an idea, but again, that could change, you know, so it's certainly the land of the unknown, which will definitely make it exciting.
Absolutely, yeah. Nice, great fun. I find a new job is even, like, I like the look of it, it's more fun, right as such.
It might be an easier route for me in the tech, who knows? Is it probably on the behaviors and the soft skills, Michael? That might be something I want to talk about here. I want to talk about talent. Okay, so I want to learn how you would identify good talent in the market.
It's probably the most crucial part of building the team. You know, the team is the thing, like everything else, offices and tilling and all important, but there's no question, if you get the team right, that's the magic. One thing I would definitely say there, so is like the culture and the team fit. Whatever culture you have, it's not like there's a, you know, a definition that you can just compare to and, oh, this person's 98 out of 100 or whatever, but that part where like they're going to come in and join and like take the, basically expand the culture you have slightly, like that is the thing that to me is like an absolute must have, because everything else can be taught. Do you know, happy or take the word you use, like, when you said be curious, like that sums it up to me. If you get someone in who just wants to, they're just interested, so, you know, they're keen and they're excited and they're passionate, that is magic. And that just the sort of like the momentum they're on, you know, the rate that they improve is like just going straight up, whereas someone might have started like a lot further along, but their rate of improvement isn't the same because they may be more defensive about their area, they're protective of what they've learned in the past, or just personality wise, they're just not going to fit. But you know, they don't fit well with the team when they get in there. That doesn't be better or worse. But there's also just some environments, just some people flourish in, and someone who's really struggling in that environment is actually a superstar in another one. But I think it's really important to sort of look at the environment that you have and be very aware of that. You know, what is the type of candidate you need? What's the, you know, the gap you have now? You look for your week. You know, that'll change over time as people come and go, and you might, oh, we actually need more juniors in the office now for a bit more like energy in the room and the questioning. We actually, oh, now we need more seniors because those guys need mentors. You know, it's constantly changing, but it's always culture fit for me. And then in terms of like their technical ability, which QA side, the technical side of product development, you know, in any role we're hitting, you know, the skill, core skill side, I'm just a big fan of the take-home challenges. Like I want people to come in and just show us your best. I tell the people that from the start. There's genuinely no tricks. I'm not interested in I'm just not interested in it. I want you to come in and tell me the most interesting thing you've done in the last couple of years, and then I'm going to have a really good chat about it. And if that chat's really good and interesting, brilliant. But if I've led the quit interview too far and we talk about something that wasn't your best piece of work, I've just shot, neither of us going to be happy because I just missed the opportunity to talk about the best thing you've done and maybe missed a really good candidate. So I let people know that, and then that's why we do the take-home challenges still, which kind of downsides too. Obviously, it's hard to find time, especially people with families. You know, it can be hard to find an evening or two to do a challenge. But the advantage of it is you don't have someone standing over your shoulder. You're not pressured at a whiteboard. You're not, you know, on the spot in front of anybody. And we don't do any extensions to it when you come in. You do a piece of work. Let us know what you would do next or whatever, and just come in and discuss it. So like that's my kind of way of understanding someone's like technical abilities. So if you get those two sides, then yeah, I think you're a really good fit.
Yeah, and I think it's great hearing that, the fact that it's take home as well, Michael, and not a on screen pair programming or any session like that, which can be a little bit daunting for candidates.
Oh, totally. It's pressured, and it's not fun. It's difficult. No one works like that. You do not do your best work whenever someone's standing over your shoulder. And when you come in the office, no one's standing over your shoulder. Like no one is checking in what you're doing every 20 minutes or whatever it is. Like that's intense. So no.
And I love hearing about the hiring and attitude, you know, which is something which is very crucial, you know, for any business, because you're right. If you get the right desire, you know, you can fill that potential, which is a win-win, you know, for both. I want to talk about retention, Michael, which is obviously key within recruitment and, you know, growing and scaling businesses. How would you retain talent within the business?
Good question. One thing I'd say is like, I'm trying to think, instantly I go to my current team and I'm like, well, actually quite a lot of people have been there, you know, come up on their 4-year mark now. I mean, the company is not quite 5 years old in Belfast. So like, I'm pretty happy at that. We have good retention. I'd say that there's a lot of this, you have to get the essentials right. So there's an immediate thing that's like, I wouldn't say it'll keep people long-term, but if you don't get it right, they're going to leave very short-term, which, you know, at its simplest, people quit bad managers. If you're a micromanager, if you're talking down to people, if you only want your ideas, and people don't realize that they're doing that, but like, that's where, you know, a mentor on site is the best thing. You need those traits kicked out of you kind of quickly. I've always had really good people on my team, even I'm really close to, who would tell me when I'm skewing the wrong way, and like, thank God for that. So you need those behaviors need trained out very quickly. So that's kind of, but that's just table stakes. That's not going to keep people. So that's where someone will come and do a year and a half, 2 years work, and move to their next 2 year stint, which happens, the pattern, it's fine. But if you really want to keep people longer term, I think it's like you then have to go to it right now. And it's the mission. Like, why am I here? What's the drive? And for me, there's two sides to that I really push. So one is just keep people challenged. Like, I just know myself, I get bored if on any project after long enough. It's ready for the next idea, the next role, the next gap, the next thing. And that applies like to every person in the team. They're all super intelligent, they're all driven, they're all, you know, joining it, especially like ScreenCloud's a scale up now, a startup. Like, you join that because you want a bit of an adventure and a bit of excitement too. And that's an advantage. I just really like, you know, lean into that. That's a good thing about the people who joined that kind of a business. So, you know, we do, when I mentioned that shape up, the way that methodology works is you basically do 6-week projects within the team, but then you have a 2-week cool down, and then the next 6-week cycle starts. But that 2-week cool down is deliberately not assigned by the business. So like sometimes, hey, if a project overruns that 6 weeks, we'll lose the first few days of that. The team leads will always switch to thinking about the next cycle and getting prepared for that. But in between, there's these gaps where anyone can propose and tackle absolutely anything. So we've had loads of things like, one of our best was, we were talking about, you know, it's on screens. We wanted to really look into animation libraries for like low power devices. And you know, it was like the designers and one of the developers got together and did fantastic sessions, and that's able to drive future work. We have an app, it's a flight schedules app that came completely out of doing, you know, a couple of those 2-week gaps. And it's an app that's still live in our stores. It can even be just tech debt or bugs or things that are annoying people. Or RQAs, you know, they want to redo our automation testing and playwrights. And basically, given that those places where people can be creative and inventive and independent and like ready for that. And then over time, switching their projects too, so that no one wants to do 2 years on the same thing. So even with just rotating teams for that reason, that also keeps, you know, from that sort of like getting the sort of itchy feet feeling you get when you actually just know a thing too well. You just kind of want to be unknown again. And then the other side of that is also, why does the work matter? Like, I think that's just crucial. It's fun building stuff. That does get you quite a lot of the way. And especially your first 4 or 5 months in a company, like, you know, just get in and figure out how to build. You don't have to understand the whole business direction, I don't think, at that point. But over time, if you want to stay, you want to know the work mattered and what that is. And again, a scale up a startup helps with that, because we don't have the luxury of building things that don't make a difference. We'll go bankrupt pretty quickly if we did that. So we have to validate what we put out. We have to find out what worked. We have to listen to real feedback. You know, sometimes we put out something that's, you know, slam dunk. Other times we put out something and it's like crickets and, you know, nobody cared. It's really important. And we obviously were trying to get better and better at, like, you know, hopefully not less the crickets, et cetera. But then when I have people within the teams, all the teams are just completely cross-functional. So it's the team owns the project. So whether you're junior developer, team lead, QA, design, whatever, you own that project. So it's, why does that project matter? And what's the target market we're after? What's the profile of customers we're after? What's the feedback people say when it goes out? As I think it's really important people get the feeling of, basically they get that information as much as anybody else, because then they can feel, okay, well, this thing was, you know, a bit of a slog to build this one or whatever. Ah, but, you know, now I get the endorphin kick of, you know, the big marketing launch or whatever it is around it. So, yeah.
I think that's a great environment, Michael, you know, because it creates that ownership, autonomy. You avoid stagnation by keeping it fresh, you know, every once in a while. And I think more importantly, you know, given that incubation period where your technologists can go and create something or build something and really get creative and flair, you know, that's growing them as a person, you know, more importantly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they knock it out of the park half the time. It's great. So.
Brilliant. I'm sure they do. Michael, I'm keen to learn, what advice would you have to any aspiring technologists in today's market?
So, oh God, there's rings of advice. That's probably the dangerous part. I'll definitely tell you. So it's like the one I can give is, I think like anyone's advice is kind of, it's always personal to them. There's always a wee bit of like, oh, you know, what drove that person? So that's kind of the caveat to anyone that listens or takes anyone's advice. I think you should always see it in the lens of the person saying it. But the thing that worked for me and has always seems to work for me is just, I think if you just be the person that sort of makes things happen. And this is at any stage of career, or whether I can give examples, but it's the point where basically like doers over talkers or planners, like, is always a good thing. It's like, if there's a project that's struggling to get moving, or there's, you know, too many meetings happening or whatever, like, what's the first step that's like concrete that makes it? If you just get in there and do that first step, you'll be amazed what starts to fall in around it. You know, that's definitely how I got the lead roles within Deloitte. You know, people who are more experienced, people on the clients who were obviously with the titles and the positions, but nothing's happening. And it's like, you're not trying to go in, step on toes. It's just, well, I'm going to start making something here, and we need these 4 people. Hey, do you want to have a stand up tomorrow? And like, there's 4 actions. Okay, let's go do actions, you know, and get concrete kind of quickly. As like it works at like a tech lead level or whatever. If you're designing a project, you will come across a lot of people. You need to do some amount of planning, but you will find sometimes it's scary to take the risk and be like, right, this plan's the one that we're close enough in. Just someone will always want to be, you know, 100% and get like every, you know, possible edge case, and like, but I don't know that that's possible. You know, they could still be there in 2 months' time with like 2 more edge cases in a theoretical design. Whereas I kind of do enough, and then, you know, we'll just come back. We'll sort of just get stuck in. It's time to build a prototype. It's time to, you know, what does a first team look like? I've definitely wound a lot of people up over the years, because, you know, when I've come across that on a certain side, yes, I have gone off with two, three people, like with like-minded people who, you know, we've made our point, made our case, whatever. Now we're going to go and try and build it. And like, we might still be told this is impossible, but yeah, actually we can prove that it is possible. It stops being theory. Things move. And then people are always attracted to motion, you know, to once you sort of see, like, you know, the train's left the station, people want to get onto it. And like, yeah, they can go direct it, and people more senior that you can guide it where it needs to go, do the, you know, the next steps, you know. But it definitely has a way of energizing the whole group around you. And if you can do things like that in any stage of a business, I think the rewards always follow afterwards. And I should say, sorry, that sounds like senior advice, but it's the exact same thing when you're a junior getting into tech. Like I described my journey. I built, like, literally just customizing your MySpace page and building little websites and forums and all, like, was my start. If someone came down to me as a graduate role and like they could pull up like a Discord bot that they'd built, or like an Alexa skill, or a little phone app where they'd follow the tutorial to build like a little ping pong game, awesome. So that's like a thing where you've just kind of shown this, you're a bit of a self-starter, and you can just, you know, you are going to go and deliver what you said. So I think as long as you, yeah, that would be my advice. Just if you make things happen, the rewards or whatever else will always follow. The very, very least, you've got another experience, you've learned something, you know, if it goes wrong, you've given yourself a little feedback loop, and you've progressed. So that's the worst that can happen. It's worth doing it.
Yeah, thanks very much. Taking that first step and being a doer.
Yeah, 100%. Even if the first step's wrong sometimes. I've done that plenty of times too, but we don't need to ask about that on this. That's fine. We can skip this.
You'd only be back to where you started off anyway, Michael, if you hadn't tried. So, which I'm a huge believer of. So, Michael, this has been a really good conversation. To wrap things up, if people were wanting to learn more about you and Screen Cloud, how could they go about doing this?
Sure. But like, Twitter is still my favorite, or X or whatever it is now. So I'm twitter.com/Michael_M117. I had to get rid of my prolog sign name if anyone's about there, or also on LinkedIn. Super common name. So if you can find a Michael Martin on LinkedIn, you've done well. But yeah, same for Screen Cloud. So Screen Cloud, we post a lot on LinkedIn, or screencloud.com for the website. If you want to see more about the product or launch videos, yeah, we shout about everything on LinkedIn, or there is Instagram and all too. But I'd say that's our best. So yeah, and if anyone's in, yeah, I want to talk about anything, just fire a message anywhere. Happy to chat.
Brilliant. Michael, that's great LinkedIn content as well. I haven't yet seen your Twitter, so not to ditch the Twitter. I'm sure it's absolutely flawless. It's a go-to, as you say. So I'm sure it's a remarkable platform as well for anybody to witness. Michael, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. No, I've really enjoyed it. So cheers.
Thank you, Michael. Hi all, thanks for listening to this episode of CodeBytes. Hope you enjoyed this conversation with Michael, where we got good advice on leaning in to the unknown, showcasing curiosity, and just taking that first step. And you can see from Michael's experience where that takes you and your career.